Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. I'm always impressed when we do that. But that's me. Anyway, The Personal Wealth Coach is not just a radio presentation. In our secret identity, is this our public identity or our secret identity?
Either way, we're not very mild-mannered. I don't know.
Who disguised as a mild-mannered investment advisor?
Not so much.
At a small small village-based investment advisory firm. There you go. Yeah, that'd be cool. We leap tall. What do we leap?
Last week I jumped over a piece of grass.
Okay.
Yes, it was lying on the ground and
we leap tall pieces of grass.
In single bounds, and sometimes two or three bounds, but generally speaking in single bounds.
Faster than a speeding cockroach.
Smarter than a speeding bullet.
There we go. I like that.
That's Super Grover.
Smarter than a speeding bullet. I like that. That's good. We're faster than a what?
An enraged snail.
Ooh.
Yes.
An enraged snail.
We could wax eloquent with our abilities to outrun snails.
But we'd have to actually find eloquent so we could wax him.
Have you heard what a snail says on the back of a tortoise?
Wee!
Wee!
That was just a guess. I didn't know. Well, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and in our current incarnation, we are... performing as a radio program that has to do with things to do with economics and investments and things of that ilk. And if you have any questions, thoughts, or comments you'd like to make, we certainly would love to hear from you at 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
I love it when you say that.
I know you do, even though afterwards you oftentimes correct me and say, well, there are places in the world that they could hear us online that you still like it when I say it.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, the sound of our voices.
And being within the sound.
Which basically means in this room.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, let's see, what happened? Anything?
Yeah. Some things happened this last week. We like to go over the calendar. Beginning on a Monday, we had one, and then we had a Tuesday. Now we're on Saturday, so we may or may not have skipped some. I don't think we did. I didn't record any skips of days, but it's been an important week. I know you have things to talk about. I also have things to talk about. The conflicting reports on employment.
Mm-hmm.
That's always great. You can anytime an employment report comes out, we can spend an entire radio program talking about the complexities of the report itself over which part's true and which part isn't true and which part is a good thing and which part is a bad thing. And
well, I think it's actually very good news. Unemployment is down 1/10 of 1%. Job creation is also down. Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
So
wait a minute.
We're creating fewer jobs.
Jobs with
the we have lower unemployment.
Okay. And unemployment dropped most in the government sector.
Unemployment or employment?
Unemployment dropped most. So employment went up the most in the government sector. And the private sector made less jobs this time around than the government did.
That's weird.
Yes. So there's all kinds of pieces of things in here. Looking at the surface of these numbers as they're touted by the press.
And don't forget, they have been seasonally adjusted.
Right.
So,
means they've added garlic and a little salt.
Right.
You got to season these things properly. Otherwise, they are not quite tasteful enough.
And I certainly read some interesting articles about how the seasonal adjustment is probably screwed up at this point.
I think so. I think the seasonal adjustment has been off for about 6 years.
So the end result is we have a lot of data and we haven't got a clue what's
going
on.
No idea.
Well, I think there's probably some truth in all of that, and something's going on because we're getting telephone calls. The first one we have here is on 866-597-1400, so caller on that number, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Approximately 3 weeks ago on 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl did a story about China and a overabundance of empty apartment buildings all over the place.
Whoa!
Yep.
And I was curious if you could offer your in-depth and thorough analysis on that. And,
sure.
We've actually been talking about it for 2 years.
just the beginning of the in-depth analysis would tell you that your data is out of date.
Really?
If you listen to 60 Minutes 3 weeks ago, you can see already it was only intended to be there for an hour, and now we're So,
well, we will get to that. We will
we have a caller
on 773-1400, and you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Where?
I don't know about this gentleman business. People keep claiming it. Prove it.
Two subjects that I thought would be worth your time to pursue.
All right.
The easier of the two is apparently the media, such as it is, has come to understand that we have an enormous supply glut in both crude and refined petroleum products.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to me that the laws of supply and demand have been set aside for a bit. I think that's worth discussing. The more important one to me is, with all the hot money there is in the world, how are we avoiding inflation? And I'd love to hear your
Those are both really good.
Both of them, oddly enough, this last week, and I wasn't even going to talk about it today, I figured out why we have a petroleum glut.
Good. I'd like to hear it. I'm going to hang up and listen. Thank you so much.
All right.
That's interesting that he should bring that up, because I, up until this last week, I thought something's going on weird here. Well, actually, I had a part of the answer, but actually ran across some analysis that explained, and I went back and checked the data, and it's correct.
All right. So let's see. Let's come at this. First question question was about China and empty apartments.
Empty apartment buildings in China. How about entire empty cities in China?
Not only that, but there's more, and there's something.
But wait, there's more.
There's more. This week.
You could do Ginsu knives.
I could.
Way. Right.
$29.99. But wait, we'll drop that to $19.99.
But no. Wait, there's more.
But
Ginsu
wait.
Knives.
Yep, we no. will also throw in 3 banana peels, which you can use on your shoes for slipping across surfaces. Yes, I could see how that would
you
be.
You could do all right as a television announcer.
So China this week emplaced a new rule on real estate.
A new rule.
Yes, they've had several pretty restrictive rules on the number of houses and apartments available for purchases, particularly in places where the price of the housing was inflated overly high. They came out with a new rule saying, across the board, if you are not married, if you are single in China, you are only allowed to own one home. So these empty houses and empty apartments, they're doing some things here. It's kind of funny because the second caller was asking about inflation. What's going on in the housing market? If you think back to 2007, we had massive inflation in the housing market. The same house was worth 18 or 20% more than it had been just a year or two before, only because people were willing to pay more for it. Color may have changed in one of the rooms, little paint added here or there. That does not normally add to the price of a house.
So of course it does.
We could see that there was a bubble there, and then the bubble collapsed. And we had banks failing left and right, and we had these big moves in our government to save the banks. Well, same thing in China took place. Their housing was overinflated. When the recession hit the rest of the world, the Chinese government, which has had this massive surplus of money for years, it's been building up this massive amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than let the...
But not just money, dollars.
Dollars, yes.
Right.
Rather than let the country be beaten up by this financial downturn, instead, they started building cities, full cities, cities of 1 million plus people with nobody living in them, to keep the employment
up. Actually,
the
cities weren't of a million plus people. It was a million plus apartments.
Apartments,
cities.
Yes. Right. So that people that could live there would be a million plus, but nobody lives there.
With
or 25,000.
Schools and office buildings and the whole thing.
Right. The whole thing.
Just in case they need an extra city.
Massive infrastructure in place. And they did this with this extra money that they've been building up so that they wouldn't have a recession. The problem is now it's leading to inflation. Because when you have lots of people employed doing things that really have no value in the economy, you're just getting paid to do something, that is the definition of inflation. If you give money for something that's not valuable, that means that things that are valuable get more expensive because by comparison, you need more money for that. Well, the Chinese now are walking a tightrope. They are doing more complex things than our Federal Reserve by far because their inflation rate is going up, and they're terrified. So the move that I just mentioned about putting a rule in place that if a single person can only buy one home, they can't own more than one home, that is to prevent further inflation because
they have inflation in their furthers?
Yeah, in their furthers. Because if the government is paying to build all these homes, then there's a demand that isn't to live in the home. The government is creating a demand for real estate by paying people to build real estate. So savvy young investors in China have been buying real estate and then selling it to the government or to other people or whatever, and this demand, an external demand or internal demand, depending on how you look at it, from the government of having these items here has been leading to inflation across the board.
Do you ever think about becoming an economist?
I don't have enough hands.
Because of all of the weirdness you've just rumbled back and forth.
Many ways I do consider what we do.
What happened? Let me try economists. To sum up what he said. He's wearing a plaid shirt, and so he's speaking in plaid.
Yes.
And I'm going to sum it up in plain. During the economic downturn, the recession that the rest of the world went through, China didn't have one. And the reason they didn't have one is they spent a lot of government money having people build whole new cities that they didn't need to keep them employed. So now that they're past this.
Our stimulus was about $800 billion. If you just multiplied their stimulus, if you took it as a proportion of their GDP and applied it to us, if we had done the same level of stimulus spending as a proportion of our economy, we would have been talking about $3 trillion of money being pumped into the economy with no value behind it.
We've talked about the fact that in China they have avoided inflation by creating money sinks. And for those of you not familiar with the term, a heat sink, and this is where the term comes from, is like the thing that you see on a...
they're nothing like bathroom sinks. Nothing at all like bathroom sinks.
They're a bunch of metal ridges that are put on a computer chip, or they're actually inside of your computer for the air to blow across, to get rid of excess heat. And it's a place where you can pour. It is a sense like a sink, in that you pour the water in the sink and it goes away. That's where the actual term came from. So you want to get rid of excess quantity of something, you create a sink, like a sinkhole. And from buying things that were creating the biggest problem. The biggest problem they had was investment money pouring into China, which has devastated other economies.
That's what happened in Cyprus and Malta and Iceland. And
they have managed to sink, literally, a lot of money into places that make the money not have an effect and go away. Now, it's a great experiment. No one really knows if that's really going to work all that well in the long term, but it's working okay for them so far. So what they want, one of their sinks that also keeps people employed, is the construction industry. And is it something really important to keep in mind whenever we're discussing something about China? There's two things, actually. One is they have a fundamental fear of chaos or disorder.
Correct.
That is as profound, more profound than our fear of the government taking over and taking our guns away. Far
yes.
more severe.
Oh, yeah.
The fear, because they remember the warlord time
It's very fresh in their memory.
Post-World War II, prior to World War II, when...
The Japanese were ruling, but they were just another set of warlords. Before that, it was Chinese warlords.
And it was just basically chaos. It was very similar to the condition in Europe in the 1600s and in the 1300s. Which, by the way, still affect us, and I won't go into that. But
yeah, that's a lot of fun, but it's a different subject.
The point is that the Chinese are doing this, and they have a great desire to maintain stability at all costs. And almost everything the Chinese do, publicly and economically, is with the aim of enhancing stability, including when they saber-rattle against the United States,
yeah,
including when they appear to support North Korea. Why are they supporting North Korea? Because they're absolutely terrified that the North Korean regime will collapse and a few tens of millions of
anarchy
of absolutely starving to death North Koreans will come pouring across the border into China,
yeah,
totally disrupting their economy.
The Chinese troop movements that have been taking place during all of the saber-rattling from North Korea, they're building up troops along the border with North Korea, which on the surface looks like they're getting ready to go in and support the North Koreans if they're ever invaded. The reality is that they're setting up refugee camps because they don't want a bunch of starving North Koreans to come flooding into China. They don't want it. Just as a side note, Old Baldy's daughter, who happens to be my sister.
This is very complex.
Yes. It's a very strange, interesting thing going on here. My sister has just left China. She's now in India.
But having visited Nepal on the way.
Right. But she was in China for about 6 weeks, and I'm really looking forward to getting some more information from her. But what I have gotten is more anecdotal than the stuff that we read, but just backs up exactly what you were just saying. It's all about stability. So that existence, the economy that they have over there, their version of the Federal Reserve has much greater powers than our Federal Reserve.
Okay.
Anyway, that was kind of a long-winded and non-answer, but more analysis of the question that was given.
Their whole government basically acts like the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go on to the petroleum glut.
Yes, let's do that.
You ready to glut yourself on petroleum?
Yes, and I wanted to address one thing before handing it over to you. The caller made a reference to the laws of supply and demand being put aside for a moment, and I say that when people say that, it's very similar to saying the law of gravity has been put aside for a moment. You can do it, but when you recognize at some point...
Just go visit the space station for a while.
Well, the thing is about the space station, free fall is constant falling. It may feel like you have no effect of gravity, but all it takes is a little bit of change in your orbit, and you find out that you've been falling the whole time, and this time it's going to end with a smish.
Yeah, one of the...
Or a smash.
The essence of flight, according to Douglas Adams...
Yes, this is great. Greatest definition ever.
Throwing yourself at the ground and missing.
That's orbit.
Which is what the space station is doing. It's throwing itself at the ground, but continually missing. So as long as it keeps missing, then we're really cool. And, of course, you do need to have a pretty much friction-free environment,
right,
like space where there's no air.
Yeah, slow you down, make you fall down faster. Anyway, yes, so the end of what I was going to say about this is that supply and demand may look like it's been put aside. Just like if you think about empty apartments in China, the demand is coming from a place that it doesn't normally come from. It's coming from China. It's coming from the government of China. What's going on with oil is similar, too. So, yeah,
well, actually,
back to you.
What happened in the 1970s, when the Arab oil embargo hit, there were a series of knee-jerk reactions.
I jerk my knees occasionally, too.
One of which was a law that the president asked for, was passed by Congress at the time, and you're going to think this is a little strange, forbidding the export of crude oil from the United States.
And people are going, wait a minute, I thought we were net exporters now. What's going on?
We're net exporters of petroleum products.
Refined.
But we have a little problem, and it's getting to be a big problem, and that is that no one at that time envisioned the world or our petroleum capacity looking like it looks today. We have a double set of problems. One is we can't export the stuff, and interestingly enough, oil produced in the United States is generally what's called light sweet oil.
Tasty. I like it with cake.
And here's the problem with that. The majority of refineries in the United States...
not set up for light sweet.
...are set up to process the heavy sour oil from places like Venezuela.
Oh, my.
And...
we just found a whole bunch of good stuff.
NIMBY raises its ugly head on a couple of points.
NIMBY? Not in my backyard.
Yes, there's two things that we need in the United States to process the relatively tremendous amount of petroleum that we're capable of pumping out of the ground on a continuous basis right now. We need pipelines, which again run into the NIMBY problem because, to give you an example, the Texas T-Bone Trans-Texas Corridor issue.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. You're ahead of me
here.
The
objection to that by the people who were against it
and
is
a lot
that,
of people that listened to this station were against it. They called in and told us they were against it.
They were against it because it would allow private companies to profit from the use of eminent domain to seize people's property. One of the things that was major item that was going to go down the Trans-Texas Corridor was a big pipeline for oil. And this has happened across the country where the oil pipelines have been blocked by local actions. So we have a lot of oil production in states where there are no refineries to refine the kind of oil. As a matter of fact, this is what's really weird. The refineries for light, sweet oil in the United States are almost all on the East Coast because
they used to get it
from Saudi Arabia. But our oil production for light sweet crude is in the Midwest, including Texas. So how do you get the oil from the Midwest to the East Coast if you don't have a pipeline? And the answer is you have to use the railroads, which are running pretty much at capacity.
Yeah.
Or here it gets better, trucks.
Trucks. That
and
is
trucks
correct.
Are expensive. A very expensive way to transport oil, which is why the price at the pump stays up.
There's a little bit of hypocrisy here, and I'm going to point it out.
Little bit my foot.
Yeah, I'm going to point it out at the risk of having many people in our listening audience not like me very much. But since when is that abnormal?
They already don't like me, but they like you typically, so.
All right, so the Trans-Texas Corridor was put down resoundingly by the conservatives in Texas, where they said this is going to be funded and purchased, and they mentioned Spanish companies involved, and they're talking about basically they're talking about anti-capitalism in doing this. They are upset that farmland, good farmland, was going to be split or taken for this for non-growth purposes. I mean, it's just going to be concrete and pipes and things
and railroads,
and people have owned this property for generations, and it's going to get split, and then there's going to be a toll road, and we have to pay twice because we're paying it the tax, we're paying the tax at the pump, and now we're going to pay for toll roads. And so people were upset. They didn't like this. The same people are upset with the president for not approving this Canadian pipeline that does exactly the same thing.
He's the Keystone Pipeline,
right? There is some hypocrisy here, and it is NIMBY. It is not in my backyard hypocrisy. It is, we want this, but we want it really bad, and we're upset with the president for not approving it, but we didn't want it here because Texas is overwhelmingly conservative. We should have been the ones that said, free business, enterprise, piping oil. Yes, people are going to get compensated at fair market value for their property, and yes, private companies are going to profit from this. Texas should have been first in line to say this is great. I don't agree with Perry on a lot of things, but this was one of the things that I agreed with him on.
Actually, I had some of the leaders in the anti-Trans-Texas Pipe Corridor movement speak to me, and they didn't mind the Trans-Texas Corridor as long as you put it out in West Texas someplace where nobody
would go. Right.
Yeah, right.
What about,
in other words, taking somebody else's properties away is okay.
So all of this is a very complex answer to why we have an oil glut in the United States. Mm-hmm. We're having trouble finding places to put it in the crude form because we can't export it and we can't easily transport it across the country.
The generation of people who participated in or were children during World War II, generally speaking, were willing to make individual sacrifices for the greater good of the country. Today, there's a great reluctance to do that. In other words, back in the 1950s and 60s, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, as President Kennedy said, was the feeling. So if we looked at a pipeline and we said, hey, it's for the greater good of the economy of the United States, and so everybody can have gasoline, we need to build this pipeline, that means we're going to take some of your property and put a strip across there that you can't do anything on. People generally accepted that and were glad for the money. They also remembered the Depression. Today, oddly enough, because of government price supports, people who have, and their tax write-offs for it, people who have agricultural property are not at all interested in seeing it taken, no matter how much they're paid for it. And they just not at all interested in giving up their land. And as a result, no matter how good it might be for the state or the country, eminent domain away from existing places like up and down I-35, where we're expanding I-35, is just not acceptable to Americans right now, which is, by the way, the key issue on the Keystone Pipeline. I know that sounds like I'm being redundant all over again. But we do have a glut. We have a glut because of some archaic laws that nobody wants to repeal. As far as I can tell, that both sides are interested in not repealing those laws. And oddly enough, the people who are very much against repealing the anti-export laws, and that's, pardon me, weird, are really, really happy with the status quo because they get a lot of money from it.
Yeah.
And frankly, it would be far better for everyone concerned if we could, if we had the willingness to build pipelines, we had the willingness to build railroads. By the way, railroads, again, require eminent domain. That's how do you think the railroads got through it? I mean, it was a private company that owns the railroad.
And they're the ones that profited from it.
But you can't have one landowner down a long railroad stretch who says, nope, not going to sell my property, so you can't build the railroad. So the government has stepped in again and again and again and imposed eminent domain for private causes. That has become illegal in a lot of states. So we're not going to get any more railroads. Probably going to have a shortage of pipelines.
So what I was saying earlier about the two cases, the China artificial or the governmental demand being part of the reason why their housing system hasn't collapsed with all those empty houses, we have a governmental demand of oil by just simply saying you cannot export it in its crude form. So there is,
and then not allowing us to build more refineries.
Correct. So we have a bottleneck on the supply. It looks like we have a massive supply. We do. Technically speaking, look at all this oil. We've got lots of oil. But the bottleneck is not in the pumping of the oil or finding of the oil. We're getting pretty good at that. The bottleneck is taking that oil and converting it to something that we can make money off of, that we can export, or that we can bump into cars, or that we can run power stations with.
I want to throw in another one.
Yes, please.
The 10% ethanol requirement.
One more
is another
nail
is
in
another
the
reason we have a. I'm going to think this is weird. One of the reasons we have a glut in oil is because of the 10% ethanol requirement. Our ethanol production, in order to keep the price of gasoline from going through the stratosphere, has to be subsidized by the government.
Correct.
And the farming lobby is all for ethanol being in gasoline because they can
You're leading me to another subject.
They can grow corn that that is not edible.
No.
Because it's got stuff in it that you can't.
So you don't want to eat it.
But you can then use that corn to sell at government-subsidized prices to ethanol producers who then get an additional government subsidy and tax
credits.
Everybody's
getting subsidies here, yeah.
To, as if they produce the ethanol, corn liquor, corn alcohol, and it goes into your gasoline. Now, why do we have, I'll be very frank with you, with a glut of fuel...
We're doing this to...
Why do we have a 10% ethanol inclusion? It is horribly inefficient.
See, these are both of these moves were done so that we are not dependent on external oil. These moves, these good-meaning moves by the government to limit the fact that we can't export crude, so that's so that we keep it here and refine it here so we won't be dependent on foreign countries.
But we won't allow for the building of any more refineries.
Right. Well, that's a technical difficulty. We'll figure,
And by the way, it's not the federal government that prevents the buildings of refineries.
No, it's protesters.
It's locals who
prevent
it. It's
the same people that prevented the Trans-Texas Corridor in their backyard.
Right.
So all of this coming back, this is another subject, but it touches lightly on it. This is how one little drop in a pool can have ripples, deep ripples, that go to every aspect of it.
It's the butterfly flapping its wings in Southeast Asia that causes a hurricane in Florida.
The rice and rice farmers in the United States.
Oh, now we're going to bring the rice farmers in, too.
Rice has been... grown in the United States in massive quantities. We're in the top five producers of rice in the world. And when you consider that China out there is much, much larger geographically, much, much larger with population, they do produce more rice than us, but not a whole lot more. Right now, the price of rice, and that rhymed.
Boy, that was nice.
The price of rice is very nice for those that want to eat it. However, for those that want to grow it, they're looking around and saying, it's too cheap. I can't sell it. So I'm looking around and I see lots of expensive corn and soybean because of all the subsidies. So I'm going to go and stop growing rice and start growing corn and soybeans. And what that's going to do is it's going to cause in a year or two the price of rice to go up through the ceiling and the price of corn is going to drop again. And the government's going to have to add more subsidies to allow people to keep producing more corn so that they can get the 10% ethanol.
Now, let's not forget the fact that there are laws in Congress that give rice growers in Texas, both in Texas law and in federal law, they give rice growers in Texas first shot at water so that a certain amount has to be released from reservoirs upstream purely for the rice growers, and here's the key, whether or not they grow rice.
That is correct. They were growing rice before. They own the water. Now they can grow corn with that water, and they'll get subsidies. Subsidies in the free water, subsidies in the corn, subsidies in the ethanol, subsidies. All of this is why it appears that the laws of supply and demand may look like they are off there being put aside. The reality is that there's a massive... influx of money, and anytime you have an influx of money, we call that in the economic world demand. We've got money waiting in the wings to be spent on this, in a sequester no less. It's waiting out there to be used to purchase ethanol and to subsidize corn. And we don't want that to stop.
And
we don't want farmers to go broke. Little farmers would go broke against the big farmers if there wasn't a subsidy.
One of the things that fascinates me is if you actually look at the lobby money that the ethanol producers generate keep the law from being repealed. It's interesting. Once you get a law on the books...
that's giving money to people.
It takes the equivalent of creating a law to repeal a law we no longer need, and that's why they have a tendency to just stick around forever. And then they get ignored in the process of all else that's going on. Frankly, I really wish we had a system whereby Congress could step back,
Let the market do it in some...
No, just focus on the laws they have passed
right.
to distort supply and demand.
Go through and say, oh, this one doesn't work. Get rid of it.
And if we had any time, I think we should have a mandatory requirement that any law that's designed to distort economics
uh-huh.
should have a sunset period where it has to be repassed with the same majorities that it had before, or
See,
it just goes away.
I even have a one step further. I think for every law that's passed, they should repeal a law. They should have an even trade.
I don't think that would work.
I would like it, but I don't think it would work.
Because they'd be passing big laws and repealing little ones. You can't do something like that, but you can. I think there's a lot of wisdom in sunsetting laws. Otherwise, they go on the books and they stay there forever.
And all of this is coming to the last point of that caller, and we've spent most of an hour talking about these questions.
But we haven't talked about the last one.
The last point, the inflation point. He said, the caller said, with all the hot money going out in the world, why aren't we seeing more inflation? So all of our questions this morning have been good ones.
It's a little scary.
That is a little scary.
It's because it's April.
We've discussed this to some extent in the past about inflation and why we're not seeing it with the Fed doing what they're doing. There's a couple of things going on here, and I'm sure you have a bunch of stuff to say in on this subject as well. But the simplest way of looking at it is that while the Fed is pumping in a lot of money into our economy, a lot more money than what the Fed has come anywhere near pumping back in disappeared in the real estate collapse. It disappeared in the mortgage collapse, and that has to do. We could talk about the creation of money and where it comes from and all of that.
And it is still disappearing.
Yeah, and if you look at the prices of houses in most of the country, it's not only not recovered, but we're not sure it's at the bottom yet. In Texas, we were saved from a lot of that, and we have obviously hit the bottom, and it's come back some. But there are huge chunks of the country where mass amounts of liquid cash disappear, just gone.
Right, and that's and frankly, we haven't recognized it all. That was one of the things that happened in the forestalling and the blunting of the economic collapse in 2008 and 9, is that the Federal Reserve exempted certain industries and securities. I mean, some of them already were from having to mark to market. Temporarily. So what happens is...
Let me explain mark-to-market real quick. It means that if you hold a bunch of investments, in a lot of cases, they would just let you say, it's worth what I paid for it, because you wouldn't have to go and get an valuation done on it. And then the banks were told, nope, you've got to say what it would sell for today, just like mm-hmm. a mutual fund does, or just like a stock does.
Particularly in the area of mortgage securities, one of the reasons the Fed has been buying mortgage securities is because in the process of buying mortgage securities, they set a price for those securities. So that if a bank holds a security that, absent the Fed's purchases, let's just say a $1,000 bond, and we'll use this as an example, although it's not necessarily the right denomination for every bond that banks hold. Let's say they have a $1,000 bond, and because of the defaults and potential defaults and problems that are going on in the mortgage securities world, let's just say a fair market value on the open market for that bond, that $1,000 bond, is $100. And believe me, they're out there. Okay, so now we got a $1,000 bond that in the open market would be worth $100. If the Fed is targeting that particular bond or set of bonds and is purchasing them at $900,
mm-hmm.
then the market value of that bond is $900.
Right.
And what happens is, as they are buying bonds, they're very, very slowly, as the banks recover, lowering the price they're willing to pay for these deep discounted bonds, so that the sudden shock of having a bond that was worth $1,000 yesterday AAA rated, suddenly its rating goes to, huh?
Yeah, in 2007, it went from AAA to nothing, worth
less. By 2009.
Less. Yeah.
So if that's true, a lot of banks would have collapsed. Now, that's not because they made bad investments. It's because they got bad bonds that were put together by Lehman Brothers or Merrill Lynch or something like that.
Lehman Brothers are easy to blame because they're not around anymore.
But Merrill Lynch has also been hammered for it. So is Goldman Sachs and so on.
Yeah.
So the bottom line to it is the Fed is continuing to buy bonds at lower and lower prices so that the shock of loss is gradual and the banks are able to accommodate it with the profits they're making now.
It's like the frog in the pot of boiling water. You bring the water up to boiling slow and it stays in there. Now,
But in this case, it's a healthy, reasonable thing to do. It keeps the banking system from collapsing and
correct.
The currency from collapsing.
Now, just to get back to the point that we were both referring to just a minute ago, even though the Fed is pumping in a lot of money, what they're pumping in, what they're buying in these mortgage securities, they're buying at less than the value of the security was back in 2007. So even though people are saying it's hot money, they're pumping money into the economy, they're pumping a lot less money into the economy than disappeared from the economy. Those bonds, if you recall, $1,000 being a normal size bond, they weren't selling at $1,000 in 2006 and 2007. They were selling at $1,050, $1,080. It was at a premium, and now they're selling to the Federal Reserve, who's willing to pay more than anybody else for them, for $900 or $800. So there is a loss of money to the banks. There's a loss of money to the economy, a net loss, even with this money going back into it, that we have to replace before we get any kind of inflation.
And so we're and there's other issues as they're recognized across the economy. And we have another – I mean, basically, there isn't any hot money.
No.
There is money that's replacing missing money.
Yeah, there's a lot of cold money.
Wow. And there's another, we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes. You were talking about the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always thought that it would have been a better idea to move it, say, in the middle of Texas or out of West Texas somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already have I-35 corridor and I-45 corridor in East Texas, and where you put a major road, you'll be having business and residential development following.
That's not very good logic, I'm afraid.
It seems like good
the
logic.
The road doesn't produce the business. If you drive up 283 out there in West Texas today, you don't see great cities popping up along 283.
Or you drive
even
out.
Even though it's a four-lane highway.
Head out on the I-10. Head out on I-10 and you'll go hours at some points without seeing a city.
Right. If you were in Dallas and you wanted to go to Houston, would you be at all interested in driving through West Texas to get there?
No, but if I was going to Laredo, I might.
Why would you go to Laredo from Dallas?
Yeah, the Laredo.
There's no heavy traffic that way.
That's where all the trucks go.
No.
Used to.
No, there's trucks that go out there, but the main flow of trucks is from the ports along the coast. And the further west you get into Mexico and into the United States, the lower the traffic count gets. So basically, we have I-35 in places where it's already been expanded yesterday, packed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bumper-to-bumper traffic. No accidents, but it was operating at full capacity. So if you were driving up I-35, at what point would you be willing to drive 100 miles out of your way through West Texas to avoid I-35? And if you're willing to do that, you just go up 283.
There's a point here. I want to agree with you, caller, that yes, usually if you put in a major thoroughfare, cities will go around it. The problem is if you're planning way out into the future and say, we're going to put a major thoroughfare here, and that will cause cities to grow in the next 20, 30 years.
You're Chinese.
It's a good idea to do that, but it's only a good idea to do that if you can keep up with current demand for your infrastructure, current demand for transportation, and we're at capacity now. If we don't increase, if you think of our population centers, Dallas to Houston or Austin to Houston or Austin to San Antonio or San Antonio to Dallas or Fort Worth, what you find is that even 10 years ago, you could travel that route at about an hour quicker speed going from San Antonio to Dallas or Fort Worth. An hour. That is a massive, significant change in it because our corridors are packed. And unfortunately, we do have to play some commercials this hour. But gotten good questions.
It boils down to the fact that you should put a highway between two points where people want to go and not put a highway out in West Texas. Yeah. Let's put it like this. You'd be paralleling 283, which does not have traffic jams.
And unfortunately, if we followed the logic, the simple logic that's normally correct, if you put a highway somewhere, town set up, it's only true if you have high-demand items at both ends of the highway. If you actually look back at railroad records, you'll find lots of routes that railroads put in that went nowhere, that they thought, okay, people will just live there now, and they never happened. People spent a lot of money to put railroads that went nowhere, and they just shut them down. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, we got a break for commercials. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll be back in a few minutes after these important words from KTEM sponsors. And we're back with another three or so minutes in this hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. Chris, we have another hour following this one on the other side of Fox News. That was complex. And anyway, the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We didn't even mention the fact that Mixed Data keeps stocks flat for the week.
Mixed Data?
That's what the...
Is that like a party mix? Is checks involved there?
So stocks were flat for the week.
Just dump trucks are running. Stock certificates, they're usually flat.
Well, it all depends on what kind of stock you're talking about. If you're talking about livestock that are flat.
Oh, yeah, you don't want flat livestock unless you're eating hamburgers.
Basically roadkill. Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 0.09% for the week. S&P 500 was down 1.01% for the week. So basically, we could talk about the Steve Jobs. I mean
not the Steve Jobs report.
Really dead. Yeah, we could talk about the jobs report and all of that. But basically, it's noise. A single week's jobs report or a single month's jobs report, unfortunately, is just noise. You get a long term trend, you get something, but that's why the market didn't overly react to it.
Right.
Basically, a lot of people were looking for an opportunity to sell. Some people were looking for an opportunity to buy, and it pretty much equaled out. And
exactly.
People are kind of taking a breather at this point. When you consider that the one-year return of the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 11.52%, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think a lot of the retail sales was more of an impact of the payroll tax hike than anything else. People have a little bit less money to spend, but we are about out of time for this
hour. Is that what you said?
We're about out of money for this hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting on the weekends. During the weekday, we have someone, some smiling voice of an actual live person answers the phone. But if you'd like to call us off the air locally, you can call
947-1111.
Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. That's voicemail. Or you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com.
Oh, you separated them. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, well, you said people were trying to send an email to jeff or jake@tpwc.com. That doesn't
exist. And we actually have recordings of the show. They're called podcasts, but very few people use pods anymore. And you can get those at our website, which is thepersonalwealthcoach.com, right?
Yeah, very well done.
Did you like that?
You did a great job.
Cool. I don't normally say that. But we'll see. You'll hear from us next hour if you're listening.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. The best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.